Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of the VCpreneur podcast, a podcast that provides a unique perspective of the startup world through the lens of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. I am your host Digjay, and today I have with me Vishesh Rajaram, founder and managing partner at Special A Invest, which is an early stage investment firm focusing on B2B deep tech startups across both hardware and software. Vishesh, who has about 13 years of experience across enterprise tech and consumer services, started his venture capital journey with Venture East in 2007, which is one of India's oldest VC firms. After spending almost a decade at Venture East, Vishesh founded Special A Invest in 2016 along with his ISB batchmate and co-founder Arjun Rao. In this episode, Vishesh talks about his learnings as a VC, backing early stage startups in disruptive technology domains like space tech, micromobility, clean energy and robotics, how deep tech founders can reduce risk and gain trust of investors, and iterating investment strategies as a VC. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Vishesh, where we unpack his experience as a VC and learn what it takes to write the first check in disruptive startups that are building technologies of the future. So without much ado, let's dive in and listen to the full episode. Hi Vishesh, welcome to the VCpreneur podcast. Glad to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this name, VCpreneur, you know, because I think VC business itself, or the kind of business that we're building it, especially as a startup by itself, right? And rarely do we get recognized as an entrepreneur ourselves. People generally look at us with people with either a lot of money or people who run an investment firm. But, you know, it's a hard job, at least the way I see it. And I think I relate to that word. So it's a good word. And hopefully it'll get you famous faster.
Yeah, no, thanks for saying that. And I'm sure, you know, we'll uncover some of those entrepreneurial aspects of, you know, being a VC during a conversation. But, you know, for our listeners who don't know you yet, we can maybe start with a brief background about yourself and walk us through the path that led you to venture capital.
Sure. You know, it's strange. I never had a path. I think a lot of it was serendipity, but let me give you a flow of what it is. I was born in a family of entrepreneurs. So was always around people who were creating things in the family. And I took a contrarian path. I went down the path of building my initial training and grounding in finance. So I'm a chartered accountant. I started my career with Pricewater House, their transactions advisory teams. And I went on to being a corporate banker, lending to corporates and small, medium companies. And then decided to go get a business school degree at the Indian School of Business, Hyderabad, which is where I met my co-founder, Arjun Rao, who I run the fund with. Then came back, took over a family business in pharmaceuticals, ran a pharma company for a little over a year, did a lot of operational re-engineering, managed to sort of break even, leveraged a lot of my financial engineering and just common sense of running business a little over a year. And I think I did my first transaction then. I managed to exit engineer and sell the company to a large European conglomerate. So I think very serendipitously, I'd sort of seen an exit. I mean, one can't claim it to be the best or the worst, but an exit's an exit, right? And I think that journey was very, very grounding, very humbling. Mm-hmm. And it taught me a lot. And I just turned around and said, I had a lot of my life ahead. I still believe I have a lot of my life ahead. And I wanted to sort of leverage my skills of, you know, working with people, understanding finance and transacting business. And of course, working on technology as well to see if I can do something with it. About the same time, there was a fund called Venture East, which was setting up its technology practice in Chennai, incidentally, and they were looking for their first hire, and I just happened to get the job. There was no more science and art to that. It was just a lot to do with right place, right time. But the interesting part was, I think I took fish to water. I liked the different facets that, you know, working in a venture capital fund offered at that point of time, which was learning new things, meeting new people, learning entrepreneurs, working with people, most importantly, and of course, understanding a little bit of finance and understanding a little bit of business levers, metrics, all of that. So I think I sort of took fish to water in sort of being hungry to learn. I spent 10 years with them. I did about half a dozen investments there. This was a 2007 vintage fund. They did seed and Series A deals. We did both tech and non-tech. We need to remember in 2007, there was not a lot of tech back then. So we did a whole bunch of different things. It was a very diversified venture fund. Then there was the second fund, which was a 2014 vintage fund, very similar strategy. And by 2016, I'd sort of spent 10 years there. 10 years is an interesting number. You know, it's double digit. It's time where you sort of reflect on what you want to do next. I think there were two things that sort of stood out for me. One was, I think innate, there was a deep desire to go build an institution. Equally so, there was also a desire to just help build technologies of the future. And and half purposeful and half selfishly, right? I mean, I'm still pretty young, you know, we're in our 30s, mid-30s to late-30s, depending on who you're talking to. And, you know, I at least have another 20-plus years in this business. And reflecting on that, I said that, hey, the world is increasingly getting innovative and disruptive. And directionally, that's where I wanted to spend a lot of my life ahead from a passion, desire, mission standpoint. And then I said that, hey, maybe we need to start all of this ground up because it's a very niche investment strategy, very niche in its focus, may or may not be scalable, may or may not even be successful, who knows. And hence it deserves all the merit to be done fresh ground up and not be done within an existing fund, an existing brand, an existing house. So that's sort of what got me to leave Venturist in end of 2016. And I called upon Arjun, someone I've known 15 years, someone I trust, most importantly. And Arjun and I got together to do this. So as background, we're a seed fund. We typically do $500,000 or less. We invest in technology, largely what I call hard to build technology or what's otherwise known as deep technology. And we do both software and hardware. Now I've been doing that for 3 years. We have about a dozen investments across the spectrum there. And we're enjoying what we do.
Right. Amazing background, Vishesh. And, you know, we'll talk more about Special Invest. But before that, tell me about your experience as a first-time VC, you know, with Venture East. What were your learnings from that decadal experience with them? And how has that shaped you as a VC that you are today?
You know, Venture East has taught me many things. I'll try and break it into two parts. I'll try and break it to reflective in hindsight, and I'll try and break it into things I've learned. I think reflective in hindsight, the environment we're operating today is very different from where it was 15 years ago when I started my career in venture capital. And it's also constantly evolving. I think the part I like the most now than ever before is that the appetite to take risk, the appetite to deal with failure is just phenomenally high. And I think that's exactly the kind of breeding ground you want to be in if you want to build a future. If you want to build what's already built, then you know you don't need it. But I think we're in this time of our era where the mood in the ecosystem is to go build things out irrespective of what happens. There is no fear for failure or fear for finding a career. Or everybody is saying they possibly have 1, 2, maybe 3 swings in their life and they want to hit a home run in each of them. So that's the environment we're thriving in. And that hasn't been there 15 years ago, but it's been changing and evolving progressively. And success breeds success. So we've had a lot of success in the coming way, a lot of failure as well. But, you know, you learn from them and both give you opportunity to come back and hit again. And I think that's the environment we're in. I think what I learned from Venture East is actually a very interesting firm. We have a lot more trust for people relationships. And that's something I think I picked up very heavily from there. You know, you're in early stage, we're investing in companies pre-seed, seed, team sizes of 2, maybe 5 people. I mean, this is not a time where you have a roadmap to do everything right. I mean, you have a roadmap, but the roadmap never plays out. So I think the ability to deal with that ambiguity and live and thrive in it doesn't come naturally to everyone. And of course, if you're a successful fund and you raise more and more money, you have to deal with less and less of it. You could make investments in later stages in more evolved companies. But I think the thing I learned from that was just the ability to work with people and to live through the ambiguity and keep finding light. I think that's the number one thing I picked up from them. And I think that's holding us in good stead because, you know, we're operating in a very uncertain environment in size, scale, technology, policy from time to time. And I think you just need to be very mission-oriented sometimes.
I think that's a good insight and, you know, good to have a flashback, you know, of your past experience as a VC and how that's playing out, you know, with Special Invest. You know, talking about Special Invest as a seed fund, you know, investing across hardware as well as software, you know, tell us a bit more about the portfolio that you have today, you know, the composition amongst these sectors and some of the startups that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing Arjun and I keep asking for ourselves is rather two things. One, you know, we need to be super excited working with these founders because that's what keeps us going. That's how we also sort of remain alive or try and keep our edge. So that's condition precedent to doing anything. But I think in terms of sectors and focus, we constantly see are people building what they're building because they have a very unique insight, which is rare or hard to get. And that insight allows you to build something which is then hard to build, right? And then a couple of these levers then multiply to more levers of differentiation over time. And we have a fairly high importance for that founder insight, founder fit. And the fact that all of that leads to something which is hard to recreate. Over time, we've learned and we know that there isn't one single bullet that keeps you going and differentiated from the rest of the world. And hence, you possibly need to have what people now call a flywheel of 3 or 4 things that allow you to then and you know keep expanding exponentially from the competition. We're big believers in that. We're also big believers in a certain amount of innovation and capital efficiency. So a lot of our companies, typically 70-80% of their budgets go into building product versus marketing, just given the stage of the business they're in as well. And the fact that we're largely enterprise B2B in our focus. We don't do B2C companies. We're very comfortable to sort of operate in what we know. Sort of expanding on that in terms of the portfolio, you know, we bought the enterprise software side, which we broadly classify into SaaS. And these are companies that are building, you know, SaaS products for SMBs and maybe sometimes big markets in the US and other parts of the world. You're building products which typically earn anywhere between $100 and maybe $1,000 per month per customer. So these are products that you can build out of India, service out of India, and possibly sell out of India through largely inbound strategies. Right. So that's something that we like. We think we can do that out of here and over time sort of have a cross-border presence. And we're also sort of spending a lot of time on developer tools. We think that's a maturing ecosystem. And with successful people like Postman, there's just a lot more recognition to that 27, 30 million developers doing a lot of work there. And hence, fairly smart tools that allow you to do work more efficiently, better, smarter, has an opportunity. And we've got a handful of companies there building tools for developers. On the SaaS side, again, just going back to what I said earlier, that this whole thrust given to founder inside differentiation, we've partnered with 2-3 companies that operate on the convergence of voice, text, and contextual AI. And we've backed companies there. I mean, when we talk about AI in the Indian context for a fund like us, we look at AI in its specifics and not general AI. General AI will be there and it's for big boys to build. And I think at our scale, we should be looking at micro opportunities that essentially give you contextual intelligence and that don't need extremely large sets of data. So we've got a company called Wingman that is very similar to Gong and Chorus that sort of operates on, you know, sales intelligence. We've got a company called TrueLark that's on the conversational intelligence side, again, on supporting sales for small and medium companies that have front office presence. So those are two companies to give you a sample. On the hardware side, we got a lot of uncovering and learning ourselves because, you know, the hardware playbook in India is not straightforward, hasn't been built out in great detail yet. And hopefully it will over a course of time. And we hope we play a meaningful role there. So the way we sort of thought about hardware was we looked at a bunch of different technologies that are coming of age and that possibly have relevance increasingly more. Our first stab at this was just the whole view on, you know, going carbon neutral, which essentially means not only do you need to generate clean energy, you need to find a way to use clean energy. And transportation is a big way to use clean energy, right? So that sort of got us to work with extremely smart set of founders that have built a company called Ultraviolet that makes electric vehicles and batteries and charging related infrastructure to it. And then that sort of led us to understanding different kinds of batteries, battery materials, battery sciences. And we recently just invested in a company that's sort of, again, building electric vehicles, but for transportation in air. Then, you know, we spent a lot of time around evolution of data and usage of data. And it just occurred to us that, you know, for the longest of time, we've been talking about data that humans are creating on devices or on computers. And then it dawned upon us that we've been creating data on Earth for decades and centuries. Then we said, hey, there has to be a way to sort of harness that intelligence. And gladly, we were not the first guys to think about it. The world is very evolved. And that sort of led us to space and understanding opportunities in space. And we're very fortunate to partner with a company called Agnikul and Srinath and Mohan, two founders, who are building hopefully India's first private launch vehicle to take satellites to space. And we've then backed a company in the same category, but in a very different business that's hoping to democratize communication between satellites and people on the ground. And they're building deep IP using light as a medium of communication to do what fiber optics or broadband did to dial up. Some of the other areas that we've been spending time has been around automation and robotics. And then we're very fortunate to partner with a company called Signler. And they're building infrastructure to make robotic arms smart like human hands. Simply put, they're building the eye and the brain on top of a robotic arm to make it behave like a human hand. That's what they do. So we're fortunate, I think, in the opportunities. We're big believers that the opportunities are in the micro. I mean, there could be big questions like, can India do deep tech? I mean, maybe it can, maybe it can't. But the point is that there are a lot of opportunities in the micros. And we're really excited to operate in that zone, building theses and looking at founders that are out there to go create technologies for tomorrow.
You mentioned that a couple of times that you got lucky and you're lucky to have these founders with you, but I'm sure you're doing something right to attract some of these founders to come and ask you for funding as well. And it's a very interesting, you know, tech portfolio, which is a mix of, you know, both hardware and software, which is very rare to see. And, you know, like you said, the Indian playbook on the software side is almost proven out now. Seen some very successful Indian SaaS companies that are making their presence felt on the global stage. But we aren't seeing enough of, you know, hardware or deep tech startups and entrepreneurs, you know, in India yet. So want to get your perspective on, you know, what do you think are the key headwinds for hardware and IP-driven tech startups in India?
I think the key headwind is that we haven't shown enough successes yet. But, you know, that's a chicken and egg story, or that goes in circles. Someone has to do something about it. And in a small way, we're trying to do what we can do. The investment business is a business of building thesis, getting comfort, taking risks you understand, appreciate, that you think you can risk adjust over time and build up. And just given how large a country we are, I think there's a lot of opportunity on the consumption side, on the education side, on the healthcare side, on the financial technology side. And there are large problems there to be solved, right? And there's also opportunity to create larger dollar values there. And they have been early movers on both ends, the investor end, the founders end, have been successes. And that's led to more of that. And I'm hoping we're not too far from doing that on the deep tech side soon. Empirically speaking, there have been lesser transactions because there have been lesser opportunities on both sides. But I think that's beginning to change.
So, I mean, what do you think, you know, needs to change at an ecosystem level to support more such founders? Broadly, beyond the investment and the entrepreneur side, you know, as an ecosystem, what do we need to change to see more green shoots in this area?
I think it'll be nice for avenues for founders and investors to talk and interact more about some of these technologies, because a lot of them are not straightforward. They're not very intuitive to begin with. And you need to create the time to learn and to see if you want to take the risk. Otherwise, it's a pretty straightforward no, right? You don't need to do any of it. I think that needs to be done at both ends. Right? Because I think the founders need to understand that they need to not only communicate the vision, the technology, and the future, but they also need to communicate ways of building businesses that can kill risks over time. And I think that's an important element, because that's an element that good VCs understand. And the minute you start showing those roadmaps or those decision trees, I think people will possibly be a lot more forthcoming and or welcoming to double down in these sectors.
Right. I think one other massive challenge, you know, most of these hardware startups face is also on the fundraising side. You know, not every VC is willing to, you know, be patient enough that most of these deep tech or, you know, hardware startups demand. And it's because it's the way, you know, the VC funds are designed. They're answerable to their LPs, you know, they have fixed fund size. They might not even have enough capital to deploy as well. So, you know, despite all these challenges that we discussed, right, what do you think should be the approach of the founders at these hardware and deep tech startups to keep themselves alive and maybe design their roadmap in a way that, you know, helps them stay the course and keep scaling?
I think the single answer to that is find a way to kill risk, because the more you reduce, the better the chances of raising capital.
Right.
That's the single most answer. I think the complication there is that it's easier said than done, right? And you need to find ways to build your businesses to be able to do exactly that, to be able to offer that level of innovation and differentiation, to give you that element of modularity or Lego blockish approach to just building the business. And frankly, not everything can be done in that manner. For example, drug discovery is not something that can be done in that manner. That's largely zero or one for most of its decision tree path, right? But there could be other things where you could be building modular businesses in phases, and in each phase, you're showing significant risk reduction. I mean, Agnikul is a classic example that when we sort of got in, they had a great vision of building a very modular rocket business that allows you to sort of leverage two or three layers of differentiation. One, that is an extremely small rocket. Two, that you can sort of 3D print it in hours as against in months. And three, they had very deep IP in being able to sort of scale the rocket up or down basis the payload, almost equaling to mass customization, right? And that then sort of allowed them to break down their business and say, in the next 18 months, what are key risks that I think I can kill or reduce? And that allows me to increase the chances of survival. And that's how you build some of these companies. I mean, if I step back, do some of these deep tech companies need a lot of money? Of course, yes. But does most businesses need a lot of money? Of course, yes. So there's no reason to sort of double whammy a deep tech company because it needs more money. But the point is that in that phase of investment, are they being able to achieve significant milestones that reduce risk? That then builds credibility to where they're heading. I think that's an important element. Of course, all other things, given market, given differentiation, given customer value, all of that, that's factored in. I'm assuming that's already there. And then what else do you need to do on top of that?
I think that's a really good insight and might appear straightforward, you know, after listening to it. But that's ultimately what, you know, investors are looking for. You know, they want to reduce risk at every point that they make a decision. And if the founders can show them that this is the way that they're going to reduce risk at every stage as they scale the company, I think it's a win-win. Another very interesting aspect, you know, about hardware and deep tech startups is they have long tail outcomes. And a lot of value creation, you know, comes probably after waiting for X number of years, probably 5 or 6 years down the line, which means it requires a lot of patience and perseverance, you know, on a relative basis compared to SaaS or software to stay the course and keep building. So what do you particularly, look for in some of the founders that you're backing on the hardware and the deep tech side?
Firstly, very good insight. You know, just on that line, and I think I read this somewhere and it sort of resonates very well in my mind that people significantly overestimate what they can do in 2 years and significantly underestimate what you can do in 10 years. And I think a lot of that applies to deep tech. So expanding on that, there are two things that we look for in founders. One, the kind of people who can deal with failure and or change and or lack of progress. And two, people who are very vision/mission oriented, that the monetary is a great byproduct. I'm not saying they will not care about the money. They should, and I do too. But just the larger purpose allows you to stay the course. Otherwise, it's a very, very difficult journey. I mean, forget deep tech, SaaS. Any journey of an entrepreneur is extremely painful and harsh.
Absolutely.
So you have to make it worthwhile, and you have to build yourself a North Star that is not the cap table. So we look for such kind of people.
So, you know, just one last question on the topic that we're discussing on the hardware side. You know, as a seed stage fund, there is a cap on, you know, how much you can support these startups in terms of capital, right? And most of these startups are, you know, very capital hungry, capital intensive startups. So how do you add value, you know, beyond just the capital and, you know, try to handhold and, you know, support these startups?
We invest in people who we think are better than us. I have to confess that truth to you. We help them. But we're big believers that they're creating destiny and we're part of the process, right? So I'm very careful with the words value add and handhold. I think we're around them to share what we learn, what we see, and where we fail, so that they don't have to waste time failing on the same things. They can find newer things to mess up and learn from it, right? And I think that's largely the value add from, you know, time we spend with people and how we help. Of course, we do everything that most other folks do, hiring, fundraising. I think steadily we're learning playbooks for hardware, playbooks of fundraising for hardware. We're also working with different people that have access to grants that are allocated for people building some of these technologies. We're also working with people who are building infrastructure for some of these technologies that we can leverage. So we're trying to introduce capital efficiencies there. For example, Ultraviolet has a fairly significant investment and interest from a large listed company in the two-wheeler business, and they have a lot of expertise and knowledge in domain infrastructure, which they can lend to this company. Agnicool's sort of incubated out of IIT Madras in their combustion lab, which is an infrastructure that runs in the millions of dollars. So sometimes they find it, sometimes we help them, direct them to these places and they find it. So some of these allow you to build buffers in CapEx or in infrastructure that's needed along the way that we think can be helpful. Of course, fundraising for any business is very hard, and you know that's more art than science, and everybody's learning along the way.
Got it. So Vishesh, shifting gears a bit here, you know, I want to talk a bit more about the art of VC and the entrepreneurial side of VC that we touched upon earlier. And VC investing is primarily thesis driven most of the time. It takes a few years before you know whether your thesis is playing out right and whether it's enough to generate the returns you had promised your LPs. So tell us, you know, is there a way to shorten this feedback loop before waiting for the outcomes that returns from some of the exits that may or may not come in the future? And is there a way to iterate and make changes to your investment approach in real time?
It's a good question, a tough question, and I don't know if I have the right answer. I wish I did, right? But I can share with you what I'm seeing. The landscape is now changing fairly significantly. You earlier had people who were VCs, and then you had people like us who worked in larger houses that are trying to build our own house. But now you're seeing an extremely new and smart set of people who are building funds or building micro funds, and you've got operator VCs that are coming out. And with platforms both in India and in US that essentially allow you to run a fund without going through the pain of setting up the fund or raising the capital, I think will democratize the market.
Correct.
And in a way, it's good because it allows for more people to test more strategies and for them to find their own product market fit in the VC business. And that will allow for significant accelerated learning and iterating strategies, and then sort of scaling up from there. It's a lot harder to sort of iterate strategies at higher scales. It's easier to do it, you know, at earlier stages or at earlier evolution of fund houses. But this is a great time. I mean, look at rolling funds in the US. You've got now operator VCs, you've got founders who are running VC funds. This is brilliant. Now, they're all not necessarily leading rounds and doing the round by themselves. There's a lot of active co-investing that's happening that allows for different people to bring very complementary value to the table. And that's good. And some of them will be able to iterate their strategy fairly quickly. The core part of it is, one thing is, where is the white space and what is the market need? And that may always look very obvious. The harder part of it is your ability to relate, execute, and live to that strategy. This is a long-term business. There's no instant gratification here. So you need to be 100% bought into that strategy for the medium to long term. And sometimes patience is needed, especially for people like us and the kind of strategy that we're doing, which is to say that, hey, we're doing enterprise software and you know, hardware or frontier tech, but you know, these should be hard engineering problems to solve for. And hence you can call it deep tech, for lack of a better word. You know, there are enough things that will come in the way. Some of them will need a lot of capital. Some of them will take time, but that's the play that we're out there. We're investing both in software and hardware products. So we're not a software fund or a hardware fund, but we're a fund investing in disruptive tech. Right? That's what I'd like to call ourselves out as. And that may not be very obvious, may not be very straightforward, hasn't been done before, largely at least in India. So we'll see. We'll find our path along the way. We've got some good successes in the making, some great founders that we're partners with. So we're enjoying the journey. This is a complicated business. I don't think this is one where you look at the scorecard every day, because if you do, you possibly won't last beyond 10 days. I think this is a business where you throw the scorecard away and keep looking at the North Star, and you know, and at some point you remit it.
Right. Very interesting. And you know, it's good to see that that you already have that natural hedge, because you know, when you say disruptive tech, it's not necessarily just, you know, one aspect of tech, hardware, software, it's everything. So I think that could be one strategy that, you know, VCs can look at. It doesn't have to be a very specific thesis. It can be a natural hedge that you can have in terms of, you know, the kind of companies and sectors you're looking at.
In full disclosure, it's easier to do this at a smaller scale than larger. And we're at that scale, so it suits us very well.
Yep.
If you had a couple hundred million dollars to do this, then it's a harder problem to crack.
Agreed. Yeah. So, you know, another thing that I wanted to touch upon is VC investing is still very partner driven. In most cases, founders, you know, lean on the individual brand rather than the institutional brand, except for, you know, some of the international funds that have been around for decades. So what do you think, you know, younger new age funds can focus on, you know, to build that institutional brand for themselves? Of course, you know, assuming that they already have that individual brand built for themselves.
Hard problem to solve, because there's historically, you've always seen alphas in firms and alphas doing very well. So I think a firm like ours, we are two partners at this point of time, and we'll grow in time for sure. And at this point, we're both working very dispassionately and working very hard on each other's deals. We're seeing common deals, and that's one way to sort of keep life simple at the stage that we're in. But of course, as we expand, life will not be the same. And
yep.
Have to deal with different things. But I think if you look at the best firms that have lasted time in institutions, alignment of interest, alignment of decision-making, alignment of power centers are simple principles you tend to install to keep frameworks in life easy. The faster and sooner that is done, the better it is. And the benchmarks of the world have a concept of an equal partner. I mean, that's just one very simple way to simply align everybody's interests. Of course, the senior-most folks may just be leaving a lot on the table, but it's a cycle. At some point, they all started fresh. That sort of maturity doesn't come easy. And I think that's possibly the secret to some of these longer-lasting institutions. Of course, beyond them being success, because you have to be successful in this business to have vintage.
Yep, absolutely. So do you think it's right to say that, you know, cracking that culture code is probably the key to, you know, build that institutional brand at some of these VC funds?
I think you answered that question better than I did. I think yes, totally.
Okay, great. Vishesh, this has been a very insightful and a very good conversation. I want to move on to our final segment of the show today, which is the rapid fire round. I'll shoot some questions and hope to get your immediate thoughts on the same.
Great.
Okay. First question. One thing that you'd like to change to improve the state of the Indian startup ecosystem?
Less thrust on fundraising metrics. Talk less about it. Talk more about other things.
The most unusual, memorable pitch meeting that you had with a founder?
Well, this is one of our companies in the electric vehicle space. It was an 8:30 last meeting of the day, possibly the only meeting where I walked away saying, I'll invest in the first meeting. Something that I won't forget.
Amazing. Anything specific that you think that, you know, the founder got it right to have you commit in the first?
He just built something that I'd never seen anybody build. It could be my lack of experience, or it could be his tenacity of having built something. I think it was a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
And this is phenomenal.
Okay. Awesome. If you had to give a TED talk, what topic would you choose and why?
Well, I'd love to talk about, what it takes to keep Earth going longer than it possibly is at this point of time. A lot of what we're doing on the technology side is also finding ways for humans to last longer here.
Yeah. Hopefully we get to hear that TED talk very soon.
Hopefully I have my mind ready as well.
last question. VCs and founders from the ecosystem that you admire and look up to?
It's a long list, but I'd like to mention about the folks that are spoken less about, right? I think folks who are building businesses that are not successful, or that's hard to be successful, are the kind of guys that, you know, we look up and admire too, because the ones that are successful are already admired and spoken of enough. We love people who are dealing with challenges and building up from there. That's exactly the kind of people we admire. So I'm not going to name them, but those are the guys.
Vishesh, it's been a privilege to, you know, have you on the show today. So thank you so much, for being on the show. And, before we say goodbye, any last thoughts for, you know, aspiring founders and current founders who are listening to this podcast?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me on. It's very kind and humble of you. In terms of message to founders, I think you have to find ways to build businesses that outlast you over time. And as a result, clearly outlast your investors. And you need to be building things that you're deeply passionate about. And keep that at the back of your mind, despite all the ups and downs that you go through. And I think that's the North Star you need to be aiming for.
Beautiful. Vishesh, it was a pleasure having you on the show, and hopefully we'll have you back on the show sometime soon. So thank you so much for doing this, and take care and stay safe.
Very kind. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the VC Bruno podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let our guest know about it, share your thoughts on social media, and let them know what were your key takeaways. We would truly appreciate if you could subscribe to our podcast on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a review on Apple iTunes. This will help others discover the podcast. To get insights and to learn more about startups and venture capital, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We will love to hear from you there. You can find all episodes together on our website, thevcpreneur.com. We will be back again next week with another VCpreneur that is making a dent in the venture universe. Until then, take care and keep shining.